Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
That's some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys get real banged and we work in a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something like that.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. This is your host, Jason Staples, here on the Seminole Sports Radio Network. Lots to talk about in the wake of the Wake Forest game, which, we're not just going to break down the Wake Forest game. I've gotten a lot of questions on social media there and via other forms, other avenues. So, recording this a little bit later than normal this week. Been busy trying to coach my own team and do some other things here. So apologies for it being a day later than intended. But let's get to it. First, I want to once again thank the sponsor of this show, Luis Marquez from Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville. Once again, make sure you give Luis a call if you have any real estate needs in the greater Jacksonville area. Let him know you heard about it, heard about him through this podcast. Definitely help me out quite a bit. Still a lot to come in terms of some merch that we're working on. Should be releasing here before too long as well. So pretty excited about that. But just have a little bit more to do there. Now, let's go ahead and get to it. First things first. Good thing Florida State special teams are so good, right? Because Wake Forest probably wins that game if Florida State doesn't win the special teams battle, and could have won the special teams battle by a good bit more had the opening kickoff not been called back due to a block in the back that was a little ticky tack. They called it on Fred Jones, but that was mistaken. The actual call was on Jaquez Patrick, which, you know, he's going to block a guy who then turns his back to him right as he goes to block him, and ordinarily that doesn't get called, but that's just the way things have gone for FSU so far. This game is completely different if that play isn't called back, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. Like I said, I'm not going to spend too much time getting into the weeds on the details of the game. I mean, I could go down and break down every individual play. Went back through and looked at a good bit, and it's interesting the way things are sitting for this Florida State team. And thinking about it from a coaching perspective, there's a lot there. But I want to get to some initial preliminary thoughts about the game and some analysis of the game itself, and then talk a little bit more about what this says about coaching and what this says about some of the other aspects on the big picture side a little bit later. So a lot to think about. First and foremost is that unlike the first two weeks, the Florida State offensive line was maybe the strongest unit on the Florida State offense. I mean, they played very well against Alabama and played well against NC State, two top five defensive lines in the country. Offensive line was good in those games. This game against Wake Forest, that was not the case. The offensive line did not play well. So for all of you out there who want to complain week in, week out about the offensive line, mostly because fans seem to have very little understanding of what good offensive line looks like, well, this was your week to finally really be able to complain about the offensive line. Florida State's offensive line did not play well against Wake Forest. Gave up too much penetration. There were too many missed assignments. There were too many miscommunications. It's the sort of stuff you just can't have. And particularly with guys who've actually played before. And things got a lot worse when Derek Kelly went out in the first half, actually basically the first drive, second drive. Things got worse significantly when Kelly went out at left tackle. He is he may be the best offensive lineman on the front at this point out of that group. And when he went out, it got sketchy. I mean, both Brock Rubel and Josh Ball really struggled at that left tackle spot. And you know, Kelly had been pretty good through those first two games and two drives, and it really made a difference. Looked to me like Kelly probably pulled a hamstring or strained a hamstring or something like that. Maybe groin. The way that he went down at an awkward angle and kind of got folded up a little bit, and looked to me like one of those things where, you know, it's a leg injury but not a joint injury, more of a muscular thing. So it'll be interesting to see how healthy he is for the Miami game. I expect him to play. He's been practicing, but yeah, that was definitely when the entire left side in particular, when both he and Dickerson were out, there was a pretty big drop off, and still was a drop off when Dickerson came back in, and it was Dickerson and Ball on that side. That said, I think the tight ends were worse than the offensive line in this game. And this is something that's worth noting. A lot of people out there talk about, you know, coaching changes that need to be made, and they just need to replace Rick Trickett and Lawrence Dawsey because the wide receivers in the offensive line are terrible. Well, if you're going to apply the same standards across the board, then, you know, one fan favorite who, you know, everybody seems to want to keep on staff or elevate, you know, give a raise, would also right now not be given would be on the chopping block, and that's Brewster. The tight ends haven't played all that great this year, and in terms of blocking assignments and in terms of improvement in that regard, a guy like Maven Saunders, who came in really raw, I mean really raw, he whiffed a bunch in this game, and he's whiffed a bunch. He's been up and down all year, and you know, if people want to rip on Lawrence Dawsey for not producing consistency and getting his guys to block and do everything the way that he did as a player himself at the wide receiver position. But I don't see a whole lot of significantly better development at the tight end position. Same thing on the offensive line. You get people ripping the offensive line, but the backs, Jonathan Vickers at fullback has been a far cry from, say, Big Pad Chad, going back a couple years. You know, he's this. We're not looking at Lonnie Pryor blocking it at fullback right now. The Florida State's not been getting the same level of play at the fullback position either. And if we really want to talk about the thing that has been the biggest limiting factor in the Florida State offense the last 3 years, it's not been the offensive line, people. It's not been the wide receivers. Those have been contributors. But the single biggest factor has been substandard play at the quarterback position. And that's Jimbo Fisher and Randy Sanders, both of whom are really good quarterback coaches, among the best quarterback coaches in the country, and good offensive minds. But the reality is that if you go back since Jameis Winston left, 2014, they had Sean McGuire and Golson. They had to kind of cobble that together thanks to Jacob Coker leaving for Alabama and winning a national championship at Alabama, which he might have done at Florida State had he stayed. But because Coker transferred, you wind up with Golson coming in, and then Golson gets a concussion and eventually gets replaced by McGuire, and you're just not getting good enough quarterback play from that tandem to really be consistent. And then the next year, you get DeAndre Francois as a redshirt freshman, and he holds the ball for an eternity, is inaccurate on first down when he has plenty of time. He's a warrior and ends up being a really valuable player and all this, but the reality is that in a lot of key places, he doesn't get the job done the way that you hope. And now we're looking at James Blackman. This is the third year in a row where we're looking at Florida State not having what you would expect a Florida State quarterback to look like. So if we really want to talk about why the offense has not been what it needs to be from a Florida State perspective, even though last year the offense finished at the second best offense in the country on the year, so that's pretty good. the thing that's limited the offense from being the amazing thing that it, that everybody expects it to be at Florida State has been mostly the quarterback position. And I hear you all out there going, no, it's the offensive line. It's the wide receiver. No, listen, the thing is, quality quarterback play makes the offensive line look good. Now, everybody tends to look at that the other way and say, well, you know, quarterback can't throw if he's getting hit. Yes, that's true to a degree. But really good quarterback play gets the ball out before guys can get there. Even watch the NFL and you watch, go watch Peyton Manning, and Peyton Manning almost never got sacked. And when Peyton Manning got hurt, when he did get hurt, and again, he almost never got touched, but when he did go out, look at what happened to the Colts the next year. Their offensive line looked horrible. It's largely the same types of people, same group that they had with Manning. But Manning made them look good. The Patriots have had a turnstile at times at offensive line, and it hasn't mattered because Tom Brady gets he diagnoses things and gets rid of the football so quickly and so accurately that it doesn't matter. Great pass rush just doesn't get there. And that's the thing, is that really good quarterback play hides so many warts up front. And every team, with a few exceptions, is going to have those warts up front. Clemson's fans on Twitter last week were complaining about how their offensive line against Boston College looked so terrible, and they hadn't looked that bad in years. Well, you know why? The reason why was the first guy to have four touchdown passes and a touchdown run in the same game as a rookie since Fran Tarkenton. Deshaun Watson is now playing in the NFL. Deshaun Watson made Clemson's offensive line look great for 2 years. Now, Clemson's offensive line is very good, but Watson made them look great. And now, Kelly Bryant can't quite make him look quite so good. He can help him, but it's different. That's the difference. And Florida State has not had that at the quarterback position. Last year, Francois did not do his offensive line favors most of the year. Right now, Blackman is still really learning, and he looked like he was a little overwhelmed in this last game. And sometimes, you know what? It's the quarterback that makes the offensive line look bad, and most of the time it's that more often than not, I'll say. And the quarterback has to help the wide receivers look good. Now, if the wide receivers aren't very good, that's going to affect the quarterback quite a bit. But the thing is, all these pieces relate together. And one of the things that was very notable, in especially going back and taking a closer look at what happened against Wake and where the breakdowns were, is if you're great in one thing, it often filters and really helps all the other things. Dalvin Cook last year, great in the running game. It helps make the quarterback look better. It helps make the offensive line look better. And all these pieces relate. When one thing gets a little bit out of sync and nothing else is quite good enough to help that thing get over the hump, everything just, it's like a car running on three cylinders, right? You're just, you go to downshift and you try to get into full gear and you just can't do it. That's where Florida State's been. But one of the other things that I noticed, is aside from the tight ends having an absolutely atrocious game blocking-wise, I mean, this is Izzo's, the worst game I've seen from Izzo in maybe ever. Just repeatedly got whipped up front. And George Campbell, son, gonna need you to block somebody at some point. Just get your hands on him. The run immediately after the long run from Jaquez Patrick, offensive line blocks that perfectly. Tight end actually does a good job. If George Campbell even touches, gets a piece of the guy he's supposed to block there, that probably walks in for a 30-yard touchdown. One guy misses that block. George Campbell misses the block. And it happened multiple times. He nearly got Nooney Murray killed. But it's one thing, one little thing here. It's a receiver missing a block here. It's a quarterback not being able to threaten the middle of the field. It's tight ends not being able to prevent penetration on the inside. It's a running back missing a hole, or a young freshman running back insisting on bouncing every run instead of taking what's there. It's just one little thing that just keeps things from getting into rhythm, and you get one little breakdown and all of a sudden a drive ends. And Wake, you know, Wake is exactly the kind of defense where they make that difficult. They force you to execute down the field because they're not gonna beat themselves, as we talked about in the podcast before. And they're gonna play a lot of zone. They're gonna force your quarterback to diagnose. And you know, I expected Florida State to win this game by about 17. That's what I said in that was my pregame prediction. I was absolutely wrong on that. Now, when I went back and watched it, they should have won by more. More than that. But little breakdown here, little breakdown there, and you end up with a game that they could have easily lost. But one of the things that I watched in this is the given the approach that Wake Forest took defensively, first of all, it was clear they had no respect for James Blackman or his ability to throw over the middle. They brought those two safeties up and played almost 9-man fronts. It's like an 8.5-man front. Triggered the safeties downhill hard. If you've got a quarterback that you're confident in, that you feel can read the middle of the field, you beat that over the top with, you know, multiple times and force them out of that, and then you can run the ball without any problem. But the thing that I saw in this is Jimbo Fisher called this game not to lose. That's how he called the game. And I've gotten a lot of questions, and you know, I'm not going to answer these separately in the frequently asked or in the question and answer at the end of this podcast. I'll just go ahead and answer those questions about, you know, why was this game called the way that it was? Why was Jimbo so predictable? Why Jimbo Fisher called this game not to lose. And quite frankly, it was the right decision. On review, it was the right decision, without question. Normally, I will say, you can't coach not to lose, you have to coach to win. Sometimes that's wrong, though. Sometimes you coach not to lose. And in this game, they coached not to lose, and it was the right decision. And the reason for that is Jimbo basically decided, I have a really good defense. Wake Forest can't score more than 20 on us. If we don't turn the football over a bunch and give them great field position, they can't score more than 20 on us. So I just need to get over 20. And I think I can do that by running the football over and over and over and over again. And if we can start to establish the run, that's going to help us later on anyway. But we think we can run it on them because they've got a little bit undersized front. We're going to be able to get some big plays if they try to game us and make up for that and stunt and do all the stuff that they're going to do. And I'm not going to ask my true freshman quarterback in his first road start to diagnose all of the various zone looks that Wake Forest is going to throw at him, trying to trap him into interceptions. Because the only way I'm losing this game is if I turn the football over and I give them great field position. Because they're not going to drive the field on me repeatedly. That was the decision. And frankly, he was right. It was closer than he wanted. It almost wound up in overtime. But basically, this was a decision that Wake Forest is going to play a lot of zone stuff, and that's dangerous for that young quarterback to have to diagnose. And we think we can run it on them, so we're going to do it. That's what they did. Right decision. But they made it hard on themselves by all the missed assignments, all of the tackles for loss that resulted from, in some cases, tight ends whiffing, in some cases, the fullback whiffing, in some cases, the wide receivers whiffing. In a couple cases, Wake just making, you know, guessing right and making a play. And on about 5 or 6 occasions, it's on the offensive line. 2 or 3 were also on Blackman. So, yeah, that's what happened. But even with all that, it was the right decision. Because, again, they limited the damage that Blackman could do in this game and decided to rely on getting the football to their running backs 42 times in this game. And that was the right call. If anything, I would have liked to have seen Amir Rasul a few more times in this game, given that given the way that Akers right now is insisting on bouncing the football. And, you know, Rasul gives you elite speed as well, but is a little more disciplined in terms of getting into the hole. But beyond, again, Akers is going to get this. He's doing a lot of the same stuff that Dalvin did, same stuff that Pender did early on. But, you know, you've got to learn that in college, you've got to take what's there and then turn it into a play rather than trying to bounce it and outrun everybody all the time, because college defenses are more disciplined, with the exception of, you know, say Brian Burns right now. But what Wake did also up front, because they didn't respect Blackman, so they played that zone stuff that said, we're going to make it hard for you to just beat us over the top with your skilled athletes. They went with those, they quick triggered the safeties to the line of scrimmage, and then they slanted really, really hard. And this is a way to maximize your returns if you have really quick, undersized defensive linemen. Slanting hard gives you the chance to get penetration and blow stuff up in the backfield, and they sold out to do it. Now, the downside to this is if the offense does things right, you can gash a team for over-slanting and really make it look ugly. Florida State did that on a number of occasions, and there were a few places where they gashed them just right, and the back missed the hole, or the back wasn't fast enough to score, or whatever. But and then in a few cases, they missed a key block in terms of that. But you had Wake basically up front made the decision, we're going to sell out, slant hard, we're going to try to get penetration, in some cases being unsound in how we're going to do it, potentially leaving a big play to try to get Florida State behind the sticks, because we think if they have to throw with Blackman, we're going to be able to get interceptions and we'll win the game with turnovers. That's how they took it. Florida State said, listen, if we get behind the sticks, we're just handing the ball off. We're just going to go ahead and punt. Again, right decision. Defensively, Florida State was decent overall. They need to, I think, probably play Kyle Myers a little more against that kind of jitterbug slot. Need to find a good solution for how to handle some of that. That was basically where almost all of Wake Forest's offense came from, aside from a few quarterback runs that were the result of poor discipline up front or a missed tackle or whatever. But, you know, Brian Burns, I will say, one thing I will say right now is Brian Burns needs to play less. Brian Burns needs to play less. He needs to get back into just a straight pass rush role in certain cases, because the kid is freelancing way too much, and it's costing him. The lack of gap integrity from him at different points in this game really cost him. And some missed tackles in the backfield, as on the little tight end throwback, which, good Lord. But, you know, this is where maybe Kando, maybe Janarius Robinson, Wilkerson, those guys need to play a little bit more, and they need to have sweat at that buck end and do a little bit more there until clear passing downs, and maybe do a little more situationally with Burns, because, frankly, he's just... Last couple games, there's been some lack of discipline there, and he's not played his assignment. He's tried to jump around, and, you know, he needs to be disciplined. And that's true for a few guys there, but, you know, overall, the defensive performance was pretty good. And you know, Dontavius Jackson, his play was very encouraging. I thought the linebackers played well. Now, interesting to note, by the way, saw a stat posted this week that was just jaw-dropping. You know, people have wondered whether, you know, why is Florida State's defense just not looked as elite as everybody thought they'd be? When I saw this stat, I my jaw hit the floor. Wake Forest, North Carolina State, and Alabama, their quarterbacks against non-FSU FBS opponents have thrown for 21 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. with a passer rating of 156.38. Holy shnikey. 156.38. Passer rating, not against Florida State. That's insane. That level of productivity is insane. Think about it. Last year, that passer rating from Wake, Carolina State, and Alabama is better than Lamar Jackson's passer rating from last year, which is 148.82. And don't tell me, oh, well, you know, he can run. So can Jalen Hurts. Or if we want to go to, you know, another really good quarterback from last year, Deshaun Watson's passer rating was 151.15. Still less than what Florida State's opponents have done so far when not playing Florida State. Wow. So this is the second year in a row that Florida State has come out the gate and played a string of really good quarterbacks. And, you know, again, the main thing there is the zero interceptions. Alabama, Carolina State, and Wake have simply not made any mistakes on the year. They just have not made mistakes. Florida State's forced a few mistakes more than the other teams that they've played. But, wow. That was striking to me. Now, against Florida State, by the way, that passer rating is 136.32 or 0.22. Still not great defensively. You don't want that high of a passer rating. But dang. That's still 20 points better than they'd been getting against anyone else. By the way, that puts Florida State right in the 80s. It's 88th in the country in terms of passer rating given up. Although that's against all. If you look at versus FBS, that gets a lot better. FBS only, 132. Let's see. Sorry, looking at this. Florida State then against not that much better. 78th. If you limit it to FBS only against FBS, that's not great. But the level of quarterbacks they've played has been the best in the country by a mile. Florida State has played the best quarterbacks and best... It's been the toughest schedule in the country by a mile. And that's not even accounting for 21 days off and not getting your dress rehearsal against ULM. Florida State's played the toughest schedule in the country. Go look at Sagarin right now. It's by a mile. So that was interesting to me. I didn't expect that, you know, again, I appreciated how good Finley's been for North Carolina State. He's been, you know, mistake-free on the year. You know, I thought he was a good player, but when you look at the aggregate on what Florida State's faced offensively, Alabama's been averaging 7.2 yards per rush on the year when not facing Florida State. They averaged just under they averaged 4.2 against Florida State. 3 yards less than their average. Wow. So that's interesting to me. It tells me something else that occurred to me as I was watching the Wake Forest game and evaluating what I was seeing, you know, going back and taking a look at a few things. Florida State is a whole lot closer to elite play than they are to being a bad team. I know that goes against what a lot of people are saying right now, but it's the truth. It's one or two little things. It's the tiniest details on certain things, and some of it's just youth, some of it is not. But some of it, we're looking at this team is a whole lot closer to being dominant than they are to being bad. But the margins, I got to say, again, people don't appreciate how close the margins are when you're talking about succeeding in football. And that's really why Jimbo Fisher said the things that he said in the postgame. And you know, actually, I'm gonna get to that more. I'm already basically at the time limit that I want to be at for this first post-game Wake episode, I thought I'd get a little bit further than this in this, but I'm going to go ahead and in the next episode, I'm going to actually discuss coaching much more and how to evaluate coaching and where Florida State is in that regard and why Jimbo said the things that he said in the postgame here, even though it seemed like he should just lay into this team for not living up to Florida State standards and all this other stuff. Why would he talk about, listen, we've had success now and this, you know, and emphasize that stuff to the team? Talk about that more in the next episode. But until then, once again, this episode has been brought to you by Luis Marquez of Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville. Once again, if you have any real estate needs in Jacksonville, go through Luis. You will not be disappointed. Let him know you heard about him from the Unconquered podcast, and definitely help me out a great deal. But yeah, anyway, I'll get to talking a lot more about this stuff in the next podcast, where I'll also address some question and answers from social media and so on. Some about the Wake game, some more general. But lots to talk about there. I'll go ahead and release that on Thursday, and then have the Miami preview up on Friday. So until then, this has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.